Dogs, cats, and dancers. Thoughts about beauty. An earlier version of this piece was published in 1992 in the Reflections section of Allure magazine, where it was retitled The Stranger Within. I have fiddled around with it a good bit since then. Dogs don't know what they look like. Dogs don't even know what size they are. No doubt it's our fault for breeding them into such weird shapes and sizes. My brother's dachshund, standing tall at 8 inches, would attack a Great Dane in the full conviction that she could tear it apart. When a little dog is assaulting its ankles, the big dog often stands there looking confused. Should I eat it? Will it eat me? I am bigger than it, aren't I? But then the Great Dane will come and try to sit in your lap and mash you flat under the impression that it is a peek-a-poo. My children used to run at sight of a nice deerhound named Teddy because Teddy was so glad to see them that he wagged his whiplash tail so hard that he knocked them over. Dogs don't notice when they put their paws in the quiche. Dogs don't know where they begin and end. Cats know exactly where they begin and end. When they walk slowly out the door that you are holding open for them and pause, leaving their tail just an inch or two inside the door, they know it. They know you have to keep holding the door open. That is why their tail is there. It is a cat's way of maintaining a relationship. House cats know that they are small and that it matters. When a cat meets a threatening dog and can't make either a horizontal or a vertical escape, it'll suddenly triple its size, inflating itself into a sort of weird fur blowfish, and it may work because the dog gets confused again. I thought that was a cat. Aren't I bigger than cats? Will it eat me? Once I met a huge, black, balloon-like object levitating along the sidewalk, making a horrible, moaning growl. It pursued me across the street. I was afraid it might eat me. When we got to our front steps, it began to shrink and leaned on my leg, and I recognized my cat, Leonard. He had been alarmed by something across the street. Cats have a sense of appearance. Even when they're sitting doing the wash in that silly position with one leg behind the other ear, they know what you're sniggering at. They simply choose not to notice. I knew a pair of Persian cats once. The black one always reclined on a white cushion on the couch and the white one on the black cushion next to it. It wasn't just that they wanted to leave cat hair where it showed up best, though cats are always thoughtful about that. They knew where they looked best. The lady who provided their pillows called them her decorator cats. A lot of us humans are like dogs. We really don't know what size we are, how we're shaped, what we look like. The most extreme example of this ignorance must be the people who design the seats on airplanes. At the other extreme, the people who have the most accurate, vivid sense of their own appearance may be dancers. What dancers look like is, after all, what they do. I suppose this is also true of fashion models, but in such a limited way. In modeling, what you look like to a camera is all that matters. That's very different from really living in your body the way a dancer does. Actors must have a keen self-awareness and learn to know what their body and face are doing and expressing, but actors use words in their art, and words are great illusion makers. A dancer can't weave that word screen around herself. All a dancer has to make her art from is her appearance, position, and motion. The dancers I've known have no illusions or confusions about what space they occupy. They hurt themselves a lot. Dancing is murder on feet and pretty tough on joints, but they never, ever step in the quiche. At a rehearsal, I saw a young man of the troupe lean over like a tall willow to examine his ankle. "Oh," he said, "I have an owie on my almost perfect body." It was endearingly funny, but it was also simply true. His body is almost perfect. He knows it is, and knows where it isn't. He keeps it as nearly perfect as he can, because his body is his instrument, his medium, how he makes a living, and what he makes art with. He inhabits his body as fully as a child does, but much more knowingly. And he's happy about it. I like that about dancers. They're so much happier than dieters and exercisers. Guys go jogging up my street, thump, 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 grim faces, glazed eyes seeing nothing, ears plugged by earphones. If there was a quiche on the sidewalk, their weird, gaudy running shoes would squish right through it. Women talk endlessly about how many pounds last week, how many pounds to go. If they saw a quiche, they'd scream. If your body isn't perfect, punish it. No pain, no gain, all that stuff. Perfection is lean and taut and hard, like a boy athlete of 20, a girl gymnast of 12. What kind of body is that for a man of 50 or a woman of any age? Perfect? What's perfect? A black cat on a white cushion, a white cat on a black one, a soft brown woman in a flowery dress. There are a whole lot of ways to be perfect, and not one of them is attained through punishment. Every culture has its ideal of human beauty, and especially of female beauty. It's amazing how harsh some of these ideals are. An anthropologist told me that among the Inuit people he'd been with, if you could lay a ruler across a woman's cheekbones and it didn't touch her nose, she was a knockout. In this case, beauty is very high cheekbones and a very flat nose. The most horrible criterion of beauty I've yet met is the Chinese bound foot. Feet dwarfed and crippled to be 3 inches long increased a girl's attractiveness, therefore her money value. Now that's serious, no pain, no gain. But it's all serious. Ask anybody who ever worked 8 hours a day in 3-inch heels. Or I think of when I was in high school in the 1940s. The white girls got their hair crinkled up by chemicals and heat so it would curl, and the black girls got their hair mashed flat by chemicals and heat so it wouldn't curl. Home perms hadn't been invented yet, and a lot of kids couldn't afford these expensive treatments, so they were wretched because they couldn't follow the rules of beauty. Beauty always has rules. It's a game. I resent the beauty game when I see it controlled by people who grab fortunes from it and don't care who they hurt. I hate it when I see it making people so self-dissatisfied that they starve and deform and poison themselves. Most of the time I just play the game myself in a very small way, buying a new lipstick, feeling happy about a new silk shirt. It's not going to make me beautiful, but it's beautiful itself, and I like wearing it. People have decorated themselves as long as they've been people. Flowers in the hair, tattoo lines on the face, coal on the eyelids, pretty silk shirts, things that make you feel good, things that suit you, like a white pillow suits a lazy black cat. That's the fun part of the game. One rule of the game, in most times and places, is that it's the young who are beautiful. The beauty ideal is always a youthful one. This is partly simple realism. The young are beautiful, the whole lot of them. The older I get, the more clearly I see that and enjoy it. But it gets harder and harder to enjoy facing the mirror. Who is that old lady? Where is her waist? I got resigned, sort of, to losing my dark hair and getting all this limp gray stuff instead. But now am I going to lose even that and end up all pink scalp? I mean, enough already. Is that another mole, or am I turning into an Appaloosa? How large can a knuckle get before it becomes a knee joint? I don't want to see. I don't want to know. And yet I look at men and women my age and older, and their scalps and knuckles and spots and bulges, though various and interesting, don't affect what I think of them. Some of these people I consider to be very beautiful, and others I don't. For old people, beauty doesn't come free with the hormones the way it does for the young. It has to do with bones. It has to do with who the person is. More and more clearly, it has to do with what shines through those gnarly faces and bodies. I know what worries me most when I look in the mirror and see the old woman with no waist. It's not that I've lost my beauty. I never had enough to carry on about. It's that that woman doesn't look like me. She isn't who I thought I was. My mother told me once that, walking down a street in San Francisco, she saw a blonde woman coming towards her in a coat just like hers. With a shock, she realized she was seeing herself in a mirrored window. But she wasn't a blonde, she was a redhead. Her hair had faded slowly, and she'd always thought of herself, seen herself, as a redhead, till she saw the change that made her, for a moment, a stranger to herself. We're like dogs, maybe. We don't really know where we begin and end. In space, yes, but in time, no. All little girls are supposed, by the media anyhow, to be impatient to reach puberty and to put on training bras before there's anything to train. But let me speak for the children who dread and are humiliated by the changes adolescence brings to their body. I remember how I tried to feel good about the weird, heavy feelings, the cramps, the hair where there hadn't been hair, the fat places that used to be thin places. They were supposed to be good because they all meant that I was becoming a woman. And my mother tried to help me, but we were both shy and maybe both a little scared. Becoming a woman is a big deal, and not always a good one. When I was 13 and 14, I felt like a whippet suddenly trapped inside a great lumpy St. Bernard. I wonder if boys don't often feel something like that as they get their growth. They're forever being told that they're supposed to be big and strong, but I think some of them miss being slight and lithe. A child's body is very easy to live in. An adult body isn't. The change is hard. And it's such a tremendous change that it's no wonder a lot of adolescents don't know who they are. They look in the mirror. That is me? Who's me? And then it happens again when you're 60 or 70. Cats and dogs are smarter than us. They look in the mirror once when they're a kitten or a puppy. They get all excited and run around hunting for the kitten or the puppy behind the glass. And then they get it. It's a trick. A fake. And they never look again. My cat will meet my eyes in the mirror, but never his own. Who I am is certainly part of how I look, and vice versa. I want to know where I begin and end, what size I am, and what suits me. People who say the body is unimportant floor me. How can they believe that? I don't want to be a disembodied brain floating in a glass jar in a sci-fi movie, and I don't believe I'll ever be a disembodied spirit floating ethereally about. I am not in this body. I am this body. Waste or no waste. But all the same, there's something about me that doesn't change, hasn't changed, through all the remarkable, exciting, alarming, and disappointing transformations my body has gone through. There is a person there who isn't only what she looks like, and to find her and know her, I have to look through, look in, look deep, not only in space, but in time. I am not lost until I lose my memory. There's the ideal beauty of youth and health, which never really changes and is always true. There's the ideal beauty of movie stars and advertising models, the beauty game ideal, which changes its rules all the time and from place to place and is never entirely true. And there's an ideal beauty that is harder to define or understand because it occurs not just in the body, but where the body and the spirit meet and define each other. And I don't know if it has any rules. One way I can try to describe that kind of beauty is to think of how we imagine people in heaven. I don't mean some literal heaven promised by a religion as an article of belief. I mean just the dream, the yearning wish we have that we could meet our beloved dead again. Imagine that the circle is unbroken. You meet them again on that beautiful shore. What do they look like? People have discussed this for a long time. I know one theory is that everybody in heaven is 33 years old. If that includes people who die as babies, I guess they grow up in a hurry on the other side. And if they die at 83, do they have to forget everything they've learned for 50 years? Obviously, one can't get too literal with these imaginings. If you do, you run right up against that old, cold truth. You can't take it with you. But there is a real question there. How do we remember? How do we see a beloved person who is dead? My mother died at 83 of cancer, in pain, her spleen enlarged so that her body was misshapen. Is that the person I see when I think of her? Sometimes. I wish it were not. It is a true image, yet it blurs, it clouds a truer image. It is one memory among 50 years of memories of my mother. It is the last in time. Beneath it, behind it, is a deeper, complex, ever-changing image made from imagination, hearsay, photographs, memories. I see a little red-haired child in the mountains of Colorado. A sad-faced, delicate college girl, a kind, smiling young mother, a brilliantly intellectual woman, a peerless flirt, a serious artist, a splendid cook. I see her rocking, weeding, writing, laughing. I see the turquoise bracelets on her delicate, freckled arm. I see, for a moment, all that at once. I glimpse what no mirror can reflect, the spirit flashing out across the years. Beautiful. That must be what the great artists see and paint. That must be why the tired, aged faces in Rembrandt's portraits give us such delight. They show us beauty not skin deep, but life deep. In Brian Lanker's album of photographs, I Dream a World, face after wrinkled face tells us that getting old can be worth the trouble if it gives you time to do some soul-making. Not all the dancing we do is danced with the body. The great dancers know that, and when they leap, our soul leaps with them. We fly. We're free. And the poets know that kind of dancing. Let Yeats say it. O chestnut tree, great-rooted blossomer, are you the leaf, the blossom, or the bowl? O body swayed to music, O brightening glance, how can we know the dancer from the dance?